Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We continue with the September 11 attacks, 20 years on, and this time we're talking to Hasmatullah Musleh, an independent political analyst with special focus on Afghanistan. We're talking to Hasmatullah Musleh live from Doha in Qatar. Hasmatullah, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me on your show.
Jazakumullah, we say thank you. Jazakumullah for your time as well. Much appreciated. Hasmatullah, what were you doing on the day 20 years ago? Can you remember?
Yes, actually, I remember it very vividly. I was driving towards my mother's house and I had tears on my eyes and I was really crying as I was driving because just 2 days before that, Ahmad Shamsud, the legendary commander of the Mujahideen in the north, was killed in a suicide bombing, who was a close friend of mine. And when I entered my mother's house, I saw everybody on their feet, and one of my brothers said, "Have you heard the news?" I said, "Yes, I heard. It's been almost 2 days." I thought they were talking about Ahmad Shamsud. They said, no, there's an attack on America. I said, "What?" And then I remember the TV, and that's when I saw the second plane. It was showing the second plane hit the towers. And the moment it hit the towers, I said, "This is it." To my brother, I said to him, "Say goodbye to the old world. We've entered the new world." Straight away, the first thought that came to my mind, I just went through different governments and leaders around the world who were unhappy with America. Could not help it but to believe at the time that this was the work of Al-Qaeda. And I remember that very vividly that day.
Yeah. Did ordinary Afghans even know what happened in America? And the question people are asking is, would America not attack Afghanistan if Taliban had handed Osama bin Laden over to the Americans?
Obviously, I believe that if the Taliban did hand over Osama bin Laden to the Americans, definitely the Americans would not have taken so many troops to Afghanistan or invade Afghanistan. There would not have been 20 years of war in Afghanistan. But again, remember, Osama bin Laden, throughout his time in Afghanistan, he was saying that we have to bring the Americans to the battlefield, that the Americans, and when he was talking about America, he was talking about America as the West, as the pinnacle of the West, that they are using Muslim governments to fight the Muslims. And he was saying that they are gloves. The Muslim women are gloves, and we have to get the gloves out. We have to bring America directly to the battlefield, and this where it would expose to the Muslim world that America is not what it claims to be. In fact, in 1999, I was in northern Afghanistan in Panjshir Valley with the force of Ahmad Shamsud, and there I met some Taliban prisoners, and one of them said something very interesting to me. He said to me, "The difference between us and you is that you give America too much credibility. You believe that America is a superpower, but we believe America is very fragile and we can bring it down." To which I told him, maybe my friends think like that. I don't think that at all. I never believed that America was an invisible or invincible superpower. But nevertheless, I was telling him that this war in Afghanistan has caused a lot of suffering and many lives were lost. So the overall view within the Al-Qaeda movement at that time, and some of the very ideological Taliban, was that we have to show to the Muslim world, give America a bloody nose, and bring it to the battlefield and fight directly, which is exactly what they did. What is also interesting is that with that narrative, two very interesting things happened. If you look at overall what happened after 9/11, is the youth began supporting dictatorships around the Muslim world more so than before. More Muslim parties were banned, there were more finance were restricted, you could not send money around the world easily, some parties were controlled more. So there was, it gave more freedom to the Arab governments, dictatorships, to clamp down on the Muslim parties. On the other hand, the Americans kept on talking about freedom and security, and stability to the Muslim world, bringing democracy to the Muslim world. All of those all together, and then the invasion of Iraq, the invasion of Afghanistan, really destroyed the economy in the region, which then those governments suffered economically, and then resulted in the Arab Spring. People saying, okay, so the world wants democracy. Here we go for democracy. We go for demonstrations. And one state after another, as you saw, governments started to collapse. That's not what really was intended with the slogan of freedom, because of slogan of democracy in the Muslim world. And that also then divided the Muslim world. Some people believed, and I remember this very vividly, some of my friends started writing on social media that the age of jihad, military jihad, is over, because people can, through peaceful means, bring down government and have democratic reform, which I totally disagreed, because I thought that those governments were too deep. They were not going to let go so easily. As we saw, they didn't let go in Syria, they didn't let go in Egypt, or any of the Muslim countries. They did not let go. They destroyed societies, but they wouldn't let go of power, which then basically resulted in a third shift in thinking in the Muslim world, and that is that political parties, demonstrations, armed struggles at the national level is not going to stop the Muslim cause. It has to become a global caliphate, which is now culminated in the shape of ISIS. But then we saw, and they captured many territories, many places. Then within ISIS, there was this deep anger, and that deep anger resulted in a lot of bloodshed, which was absolutely unnecessary. And then we can see that in a way, people can learn from it and not repeat it, or people can condemn it and reject the entire project or the entire idea of a Khilafah. That is the debate that we are in at the moment. One of the reasons I believe that the US withdrew from Afghanistan is that they realize that once you destroy an Islamic party which is nationalist in its core, but wants Islam for its population, then if you destroy them, their foot soldiers would go on to become internationalists and would become joined ISIS. That's why they, I believe that they settled with the Taliban, because the Taliban in Afghanistan is basically a nationalist movement that wants Islam within the boundaries of Islam and moral support for the rest of Muslims around the world.
Okay. Hasmatullah has Fordon aid dried up. According to reports we're receiving, the Fordon aid has dried up. Prices are surging. The value of the Afghani currency is tumbling. According to reports, is it true that Afghanistan is on the brink of universal poverty?
Absolutely, I agree with that. Economically, Afghanistan is in a very, very bad shape. 20 years of a US occupation of Afghanistan did not bring about or did not develop an economy that can stand on its own feet. There was no manufacturing whatsoever. That's predominantly because there was no transfer of technology. Like, I remember when George Bush began his campaign on Afghanistan, he, in his speech, he said that as we have built Japan and we built Germany after the Second World War, we will also extend to build Afghanistan and make a nation. But they never did what they did for Germany and what they did for Japan. They never transferred any type of technology for Afghanistan. The economy was just a consumer economy based on addicted to occupation on the American military bases and services. With the American leaving from military bases, economy, the official economy starts to collapse. However, there's another economy in Afghanistan, which is an agricultural economy, and you can look at the World Bank records that 6% of Afghanistan's GDP and economy, basically, is rural dependent and dependent on agricultural production. That economy is going to remain. I think it's going to flourish now that the war has hopefully stopped. As official economy, cities are going to be hard hit. There's going to be high unemployment in the city. And the government will not have, the Taliban government will not have the funding to actually pay for all the civil servants. The previous government was spending something like $4 to $5 billion a year. Just to pay the government officials, government services. You see, Afghanistan traditionally population is kept addicted to the government, and then the governments are the puppets. So this is how you control societies, unfortunately. The mining sector was never developed. The industry was never developed. Even agriculture at the level of producing and competing with the neighboring countries was not developed. Only a couple of dams were built. Those dams, some of them are complete, some of them are about to be completed. If the Taliban can rely on that, get the support of the Chinese, and begin a process of nationalization and national development programs at the magnitude of that of after the Second World War, that China had enacted in China by getting millions of people into the fields and growing crops. If they can do that in a much modern way, in a much proper way, without causing a lot of hardship to people, they can come out. But Afghanistan's economy needs to become industrial at some point, and it starts to manufacture and compete in the region, which I don't see that's going to happen in the next 10, even 20 years.
With regards to the interim government, you know, we find that the Taliban unveil an interim government led by Mullah Muhammad Hassan Akhund, with key roles being shared by high profile members, including the Haqqani network as the interim minister. What are your views on the new interim government?
Well, first of all, the good thing is they call it interim government. They did not call it the government. That's a consolation, and that's a good start. The people argue that they have to fill in the vacuum ASAP, but as I just heard today from some of my friends in South Afghanistan, for example, if you look at the foreign ministry, most of the foreign ministry workers have left the country or not in the offices. The offices are completely empty. And that is also true of many other ministries. The government, as everybody expected, is not as inclusive as anyone would have liked, or is nowhere near being inclusive. The Taliban calls it an interim government, and I hope that it remains to be an interim, but it cannot run this way, in my opinion. The Taliban cannot sustain their government in the long run if they do not bring in other ethnic groups. When I say bring people from other ethnic groups, I don't mean to go back to the old cards and bring back the old figures. No. There are many other Tajiks, Uzbeks, Hazaras, and Baluchis, and others who were not part of the previous government, who opposed the previous government. They are qualified people, and they are loyal to Afghanistan, and they are loyal to Islam, and they have no specific or opposition to the Taliban's Islamic Emirates. So they have to bring them on board and try to create an inclusive government, which then would open up Afghanistan to the international community in terms of trade and in terms of good relations. For example, Tajikistan government do want to see more Tajiks in Afghanistan before the border opens and before trade goes back to normal. The same as Uzbekistan would like that to happen as well. So, the current government is not ideal, but it's a beginning. It's a beginning.
Okay. Hasbunallah Musnah, Jazakallah for the insight, for the information. Talking to us live from Qatar, request for du'as. Allah make it easy for all the Muslims, for humanity at large. And it was lovely talking to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your program.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.